That's not a good look.
It's bad. Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It is the award-winning podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, digitally, virtually, through the Matrix, is Max. How you doing, Max?
Doing pretty well. As I mentioned to you earlier, I have eaten a lot of chocolate-covered espresso beans today, so I'm feeling real good.
You got to be careful with that. I have a friend who, she told me in high school, we were friends in high school, and she told me that her friend gave a gigantic Costco bucket of those chocolate-covered espresso beans to her dad, because her dad was, like, big fan, loves them, and he opens it, and he's like, oh, fuck yeah, love it, delicious. So he watches a movie while just kind of snacking on these things, and at one point he realized he's out of them. Before the end of the movie.
Christ.
And I guess he literally had to go get his stomach pumped because he was about to have a fucking heart attack. Yeah. So just a word of warning. I know you love snacking on the beans, the chocolate covered beans. It's a very delicious snack, but be careful. Too much of a good thing can be a bad thing.
I mean, the thing I'm worried about is that, like, it's a dry bean, so you're kind of eating, like, wood.
Right.
So I'm trying to, you know, kind of mitigate my intake to make sure I'm not going to get, like, intestinal scarring.
Yeah, that's good. Don't eat too many chocolate-covered espresso beans. That's the first lesson we're learning on this episode.
Yeah. I got some good shakes going on right now.
Are you jittery? Let me see the hand on the camera.
Not too bad. Okay, I'm kind of jittery anyway.
Yeah, it's not visible yet, so go ahead and eat more beans.
Yeah. People who are jittery, real quick, if you'll permit me. My brother Absolutely. Is very jittery, and he got married yesterday. Not when this episode came out, but like a week ago. So congratulations to Jacob and Rachel.
Congrats, Jacob and Rachel. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a lovely little ceremony. We had a good time.
Yeah, during the time of COVID, triumphing with the power of love.
Love conquers all.
Well, you've prepared something for us to discuss today. And it's typically about death, because you're fucking morbid for some reason, subjecting me to all of this morbid information. What morbid information have you put together for our podcast today?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to drag me like that.
It's okay, I like it.
You like just dragging me and besmirching my name?
That too, yeah.
Okay. So I know there's a ton of stuff folks are kind of already burnt out on this year, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Are you burnt out on politics yet, Dorian?
Yes. Yes, very much so.
That sucks. Because yeah, I'm not burnt out on politics at all.
One of us spends time on Twitter.com and the other one does not. Wonder who it is.
It's me, yeah. I am, like, engaged with the current state of American politics. I love the precedents that this election is going to set.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That excitement and how much of a big fan I am is why I decided to do a whole episode about death and politics.
Okay, so we're not going to talk about the current election or anything going on in America right now.
No, I am kidding.
Thank God. So this is still a little bit of a refuge from all of that nonsense, yeah?
Yeah, our political system here in the US is currently kind of a garbage fire. and most things bum me out. And as you mentioned, I'm not even on Twitter.
Smart move.
Yeah. But I'm not kidding about doing this whole episode on death politics. We will touch on some recent stuff, which is going to be fun. We are not going to talk about the Kiefer Sutherland TV series Designated Survivor, unfortunately.
Damn.
But have you ever seen an episode of it?
No, I just love Kiefer Sutherland, though. So yeah,
and like Lost Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, love Lost Boys.
So I guess we should buckle in for our most exciting episode since Trains.
Woo!
So let's crack into the topic with the official pre-Dead Boys crack into the topic moment. On my end, brought to you by, again, perennial favorite, Giant Eagle Black Cherry.
Mmm. I went back to the old classic standby of LaCroix Mango.
Damn, it took me a while.
You know, when I listen back to the previous episode to edit it, your microphone peaked harder than it's ever peaked before with your can cracking. It was like you tore a hole in the universe. It was kind of impressive, honestly.
Did you watch the new Twin Peaks series?
No, I want to watch The Return so bad, but I don't have easy access to it.
There's a whole episode of The Return where I think they just, for like 30 minutes of the episode, just peaked a microphone and just looped it. And the whole episode is just blown out crackling for like 30 minutes.
Excellent. Yeah. Have you seen The Lighthouse?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the end of The Lighthouse.
Okay, don't say it. Yeah, don't say anything else because I don't want to spoil it. But yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Really good.
Cool. So when we do our Lynchian sort of like Halloween episode and you just hear a microphone peaking and distorting for 2 straight hours, you'll understand our inspiration for this bold creative choice.
All right, let's get back to politics. Let's focus on the fun stuff here.
Yeah.
So, Dorian, who are you going to vote for in the election this November?
Are we getting into this? Are we really getting into this?
Yeah.
Oh man.
To make sure we're on the same page, I'm talking about the race for the Franklin County coroner.
Oh, okay.
Have you been? Were you thinking about something else?
Yeah, kinda. Huh.
Okay.
So what you're saying is I should focus on local politics and the things that, you know, I might have a little bit of.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I like that direction. No, I don't really know the ins and outs of the running for our county coroner. Who are the options?
Okay. Seems kind of weird that you're not paying attention to this race and you don't apparently care about local politics.
Oh, but, I know. Fuck me, right? Okay.
If you want to, I'll vamp for a little bit. If you want to do a quick Google and see if you can decide who you want to vote for.
Okay.
So Dorian and I both live in Franklin County, Ohio, and the position of our coroner's office is up in the November election. So we are going to have to cast our vote for our next coroner. Do you have a well-informed opinion about this yet?
No, I can't even find who the candidates are. I can't figure it out. How do I Google shit like this?
Well,
Who are my options? Help me out here.
So I'm going to give you some good news. I'm going to cut you some slack. You don't really have to have a well-informed opinion about this.
Great.
Because our incumbent coroner, Dr. Anahi Ortiz, is running unopposed.
Okay.
So you're going to go in and you're going to vote. But there's going to be one person on the ballot unless you want to write in someone.
Okay. So no opposition here.
Maybe you can vote for me. That'd be kind of fun. Maybe I'll vote for you.
How many votes
do you think it would take to get on like the ticker on the TV where it's like Anahi Ortiz with 99% of the vote, Dorian Lafferty,
Max McKenna,
1% of the vote.
I think I trust you in a government position far more than myself. I think you'd actually enact some change and be responsible with that. I would just look for ways to kind of like have fun with it. And that probably is not a good idea for coroner's office.
Abuse your power. Yeah, so Anahi Ortiz is running unopposed. And she's also running as a Democrat.
Okay.
And I've kind of always thought this whole thing was a little weird. Like, why do we have to elect a coroner? And why does, like, a coroner's political party matter? Like, you'd think it wouldn't be, like, a big deal. And truthfully, like, I didn't even realize that the United States as a whole is pretty split on this issue. So about half of United States counties, which for our listeners and like the entire rest of the world, are like subdivisions within states. About half of counties elect a coroner, and about half of counties have an appointed medical examiner. So a lot of the older states who have been around for a long time have elected coroner laws, while newer states tend to have the medical examiner laws. But we still have to talk about why we need a coroner in the first place.
Yeah, that's what I'm a little puzzled about. Like, you're talking about these positions. What do these positions actually do?
Yeah. So here's an article from FuneralWise's digital dying blog that sheds some light on the issue here.
Back in England, the Office of Coroner was formally established in 1194. According to the Coroner's Society of England and Wales, there was a lot of money in death, and the coroner's job was to collect the loot left behind after certain deaths occurred and pass it on to the crown. Suicides were investigated on the grounds that the goods and chattels of those found guilty of the crime of suicide would then be forfeit to the crown, as were wrecks of the sea, fires, both fatal and non-fatal, and any discovery of buried treasure in the community. The modern iteration of the Office of Coroner appears to have developed in Britain during the 1830s, over concerns in the accurate recording of deaths arising from epidemics, such as cholera, the uncontrolled access to poisons, and a rash of unresolved homicides. These events led to a series of death registration acts, and the transformation of the coroner into an agent formally tasked with investigating cause of death. America mimicked the concept. An official State of Indiana document about the Office of the Coroner states, quote, "The death of any human being is too important to be left merely to the police, the prosecutors, the judges, and the physicians. In Indiana, we elect a public official to supervise the process of determining the cause of death," end quote. This investigation is necessary to determine a person's cause of death. Determinations of accidental death are treated differently than determinations of murder. This distinction is especially important when reporting crime statistics or when a human being dies in police custody.
Yeah. So the Office of the Coroner has been around for a really long time. You'll kind of note that, like, coroner has the same Latin root as, like, corona, which is the, like, kind of pointy halo around the sun that looks like a crown.
I thought we were going to get in some, like, QAnon-style conspiracy theory here. It's related to the coronavirus. That means it's a government conspiracy to kill a bunch of people so that the coroner's office can just be rolling in piles of money. Right, Max? We're getting to the bottom of this.
Straight up, that is a massive thing that, like, I am neck deep in QAnon shit now. Like, I read a lot of, I have been keeping abreast of QAnon theories.
No, why are you devoting time to this nonsense?
It's like,
our country is so fucking stupid.
Like, so I used to be really into like Bigfoot and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
fun conspiracies.
Yeah. I was going to like a lot of conventions, like Bigfoot conventions, and people who are really kind of anti-science like that in 2016 pivoted pretty hard into, like, I was at a Bigfoot convention and then there were a lot of like anti-vaccine talks and like, you know, we got really into science denialism and it was not great. So I took a little break from like insane right-wing conspiracy theories. maybe not even right wing isn't the right term, because QAnon is all encompassing at this point. Just insanely dumb conspiracy theories. And now I'm back on QAnon because it's like a train wreck I can't look away from.
Yeah. Side note, do you still have your MUFON paraphernalia?
Yeah, it's somewhere.
Okay, cool. I just remember that one time when we were hanging out and we were about to record at your house and I was talking about MUFON and then you were like, hold on a second. And you came back with your lanyard and shit. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
I mean, even MUFON had that thing where like there was a MUFON guy in Pennsylvania who said like a bunch of extremely racist stuff and then MUFON didn't do anything about it. And it's Yikes. Like, oh man, we really got to get better.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of the current conspiracy theories surrounding coronavirus in the U.S., that's why the coroner is an elected office, is because it's their job to report statistics. And there's kind of this like kind of incorrect notion that an elected official is more honest than an appointed one. There's other instances, too, where this crops up. Let's give a little illustration starring you, Dorian.
Oh.
let's say, hypothetically, that you get caught by the police because you are breaking into a hypothetical, large, abandoned amphitheater at the north end of our city.
Yes, like hypothetically speaking.
Totally hypothetically.
Right.
You also, in this hypothetical situation, have severe asthma. While in police custody, you end up in like a pretty rough struggle, and you end up being restrained on a hard concrete floor, on your back, and you die. The coroner would be the one who's in charge of taking your body, performing an autopsy, and determining if your death was related to injuries sustained during the struggle or pre-existing conditions like asthma. And that decision the coroner makes has major implications for how your death is going to be handled going forward.
Right.
That exact same situation happened in New Orleans recently, where a woman died in police custody. The coroner determined that it was because she had asthma, and that was the cause of death, as opposed to a pretty vicious beating she had received. So you can kind of see here how there is a role a coroner plays that has kind of social implications to it.
Right.
The role of coroners also crop up a lot when we talk about like violent crime statistics in America. Chicago has a medical examiner, and Chicago's medical examiner had some controversy recently because their violent crime rate fell a few years back. It actually fell because they had some deaths that should have been reported as being due to like violent crime and gun violence that were instead being reported as like suicides or accidental death, which caused the murder rate to fall. So, ugh.
Yeah, so setting aside any conspiracy theories or anything that we could allege, it's very clear that how coroners do their job, namely how they report how people die, have some really big ramifications for tons of things, all kinds of things.
Yeah, and you know, even though the coroner is like a partisan elected position, you don't kind of see the high levels of vitriol and like mudslinging that you see in a lot of other races. Like, you're not going to see like a debate where people are yelling at each other for the county coroner position.
Right.
I am going to have you though watch a YouTube clip that's a political ad for a New Orleans parish coroner. You want to kind of watch this really quick, and we'll pull the audio for the actual episode.
It's unconscionable. Body parts sold out of the Orleans Parish Coroner's Office. Families filled with grief lawsuits and settlements at taxpayers' expense.
Igor! Igor!
Yes, doctor?
We need a heart, a spleen, and a liver for tonight's sale.
Yes, Dr. Mignard.
Say no to Dr. Mignard and yes to Dr. McKenna.
Okay. I have a number of thoughts. Number one, amazing. Amazing smear ad. I love it. Just as a piece of cinema. Mwah. Chef's kiss. Excellent. Excellent.
Absolutely.
Work. The first thing I have to ask you about, Max, is this is a very suspect last name here. An ad for Dr. Dwight McKenna for the position of coroner. You are Max McKenna. You have famous relatives. So I wanted to just ask you up front, do you have anything to do with this? Is this your family?
Yep.
No shit.
Yep. I am related on my dad's side to the guy who ran this ad, Dwight McKenna.
Holy shit. Okay. So Dr. McKenna here, you're, is he like an uncle, a cousin?
Like deep uncle. Like, I think he's like my grandpa's cousin or something like that.
Okay. So he clearly has it out for Dr. Mignard, the opposing candidate here. What's going on here? Because this ad is fucking hilarious.
So Mignard was the incumbent coroner of this parish in New Orleans. And during his tenure, Mignard was accused of losing,
quote unquote, air quotes,
quote unquote, body parts of cadavers.
Okay.
So like teeth and bones and organs and stuff like that. And so what Dwight McKenna decided to do was have two guys dress up like in like a Frankenstein and Igor pastiche over a cadaver on an operating table and be like, Igor, we need two more kidneys for tonight's sale.
A liver and a spleen.
Yeah. And it's like everything's dark and these guys are like gross looking.
I mean, that's kind of subjective, Max. What if somebody finds these people very attractive? No, you're right. They're gross looking.
Yeah. This ad is kind of infamous as one of the worst smear campaign ads ever. Because it's not only like you're turning like quotes against someone, you're hiring actors to play like the role of a murder doctor.
Right. Right. It's not outright accusing Dr. Mignard of anything, but it's like definitely playing off of the implication that he's doing something dark and insidious with these missing organs. It's towing the line of libel. It's getting right up to it. I don't know that it's crossing it, but it's definitely like it's a little sketchy.
Yeah, it was not a good look. And it was, let me make sure I don't do a libel here.
Don't do a libel, please.
Yeah, so this was kind of especially a bad look because Dwight McKenna had also recently himself been convicted for tax evasion.
Ooh, oops.
He spent 9 months in prison. He underreported his income by $300,000, which you're not supposed to do.
That's very, very bad.
Yeah. So it was just kind of a bad look all around in this race.
Yeah, a lot of mudslinging back and forth. Or not even back. No, not all. That's not true. I mean, did Mignard respond with any smear ads that we know of? If he did, they weren't as clever and they didn't go viral like this one did.
Yeah, he probably didn't have to hire actors.
Right.
I mean, this is probably the most sensational ad out there, but this episode isn't all about coroners. I guess if it was, I probably would have just titled your notes Coroners and everything would be a little more clear. But all in all, like in the American political system, the race for coroner is typically pretty straightforward and pretty peaceful.
Pretty mundane.
Yeah. So we do have to look elsewhere to find some really good stories about death and politics. And so what I've done is I've prepped a little pop quiz for you here.
Ooh.
So I'm going to list some forms of government, and I want you to name the kind of person who, like, rules in that government, okay?
Okay. We'll see how I do. I'm not optimistic of my knowledge here, but go on, hit me.
Monarchy.
A king.
Or a queen.
Or a queen. Yeah, both. Either one. I'm counting that as a yes.
Yes, that's a yes.
I got that correct. Okay, correct. Cool.
Meritocracy.
What do you want? Like the name of the ruler?
Not a name, but like how they get there.
Oh, a meritocracy is like somebody who does a lot of perceived good, earns their way to the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two for two.
Okay.
Plutocracy.
Plutocracy. That's if it's dogs. Dogs are the rulers. If you're Mickey Mouse's dog.
No, it's a rule by the rich.
Okay. So, two for three. Two for three is not bad. Okay.
You're passing. These get degrees. Theocracy.
That's whoever God chooses to be leader.
Yep. Three for four.
All right.
Necrocracy.
Necrocracy?
Yeah, necrocracy.
Necrocracy? Is that dead people rule?
Yeah.
What the fuck does that? What does that mean?
Well, I mean, good news. You pass with an 80%. You got 4 or 5.
Sweet. That's a B. That's a solid B. Yeah.
Well, that's a B but minus.
I'll accept it. What I will not accept is us moving any further without you explaining to me how a dead person can rule a society.
Yeah. It's tricky. So a lot of those are like pretty common things you would learn in elementary school when you cover like the different types of government and social studies. Like we did that in fourth grade when you go over like, this is what a governor does. But I don't think many schools teach about necrocracies. And I think that's probably because there's only really one country that's a necrocracy out there. Do you know what country has a necrocracy?
No. I'm assuming something obscure.
Just make a guess. I think you could guess it.
Oh, I could guess it? So
yeah,
it's not obscure?
No.
North Korea. Is it North Korea?
It's North Korea.
Whoa. Wait. Okay, what? Explain this.
Yeah, so the North Korean government is fascinating. It's kind of weird to be talking about North Korea as a necrocracy. Necrocracy.
I like necrocracy.
Yeah.
Because it sounds a little bit like croc is in the middle.
Yeah.
Like it's a croc of shit. Because it sounds sketchy.
Yeah. It's kind of weird to be talking about North Korea as a necrocracy when at the time of this recording, like the status of their current supreme leader, Kim Jong-un, is kind of up in the air as to whether he's actually alive or not.
Right.
At this point, I think he's probably alive and will live for a long time because like terrible people always do.
True.
But did you know that Kim Jong-il, the star of Team America World Police, and Kim Il-sung, the founder of North Korea, are still granted leadership titles and rule over North Korea according to the North Korean Constitution?
Okay. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is the case. Is there reasoning for that?
Because North Korea is kind of a cult is the best answer.
Okay.
So Kim Il-sung is known as the eternal president of the republic. And Kim Jong-il, his title is eternal general secretary of the Workers' Party of Korea and eternal chairman of the National Defense Commission. So the thing about both of these titles is that they have actually been placed, this isn't like a traditional thing, they are placed in North Korea's constitution. So the North Korea that we know today, the DPRK, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, was founded in 1972. So Kim Il-sung was elected to his position. He took the title of president. He was elected into that office. He ruled from 1972 until his death in 1994 when Kim Jong-il took over. But Kim Jong-il did not take the title of president. They retired Kim Il-sung's title of president in 1994. And in 1998, revised and rewrote their constitution. They just like scrapped it and rewrote it to read the following.
The Democratic People's Republic of Korea is a socialist fatherland of Juche, which embodies the idea of and guidance by the great leader, Comrade Kim Il-sung. The great leader, Comrade Kim Il-sung, is the founder of the DPRK and the Socialist Korea. Comrade Kim Il-sung put forward an independent revolutionary line, wisely guided the social revolution and construction at various levels, strengthened and developed the republic into a people-centered socialist country and a socialist state of independence, self-sustenance, and self-defense. Comrade Kim Il-sung regarded believing in the people as in heaven as his motto, was always with the people, devoted his whole life to them, took care of and guided them with a noble politics of benevolence, and turned the whole society into one big and united family. The great leader, Comrade Kim Il-sung, is the sun of the nation and the lodestar of the reunification of the fatherland. Comrade Kim Il-sung set the reunification of the country as the nation's supreme task and devoted all his work and endeavors entirely to its realization. Comrade Kim Il-sung, while turning the republic into a mighty fortress for national reunification, indicated fundamental principles and methods for national reunification, developed the national reunification movement into a pan-national movement, and opened up a way for that cause to be attained by the united strength of the entire nation. Comrade Kim Il-sung was a genius ideological theoretician. Theoretician?
They're just making it up as they go, dude.
Making up words. Anyway. A genius ideological theoretician and genius art leader, an ever-victorious, iron-willed, brilliant commander, a great revolutionary and politician, and a great human being. Comrade Kim Il-sung's great idea and achievements in leadership are the eternal treasures of the nation and a fundamental guarantee for the prosperity and efflorescence of the DPRK. The DPRK and the entire Korean people will uphold the great leader Comrade Kim Il-sung as the eternal president of the republic, defend and carry forward his ideas and exploits, and complete the Juche Revolution under leadership of the Workers' Party of Korea.
Yeah, that's a mouthful. But that is the codified constitution of North Korea. It's the preamble to it.
It's good. It's a little wordy.
You can see here how, I mean, North Korea is, God, I hope we don't get doxxed by North Korea or like hurt in any way. But you can see that, like, I mean, North Korea is kind of founded on the Kim cult, this like pseudo religion that this family has built up around themselves that kind of sets up this belief among the people. Well, attempts to set up a belief among the people that Kim Jong-un is currently being advised by the spirits of Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il, and that the three of them in tandem are currently leading North Korea and will continue to lead North Korea.
Right. That's pretty cool that, you know, they're advised by these spirits. So really, in a way, you can never question any decision that they make, or else you are questioning the history, like hundreds of years now of history of leaders in this country. And yeah, that would just be like, for you to oppose that in any way, shape, or form would be like very unadvisable, you know. But just, there's not really like a ground you can stand on if you oppose that kind of government, right?
Yeah. I mean, because of that, like, it's kind of wild. But if you are looking at the strict party lines in North Korea, they are the only country that claims to be ruled by a dead person and given, like, political direction by someone who is deceased.
Right.
Which is remarkable.
It's honestly a pretty respectable way to run a cult, and I'm like, I admire their strategy here. It's pretty clever.
Yeah. Yeah, I have been really exposing some of my weirder interests this episode, being really into like QAnon and the North Korean government.
Yeah.
This is all like an intellectual interest. I want to make that very clear, is that I am like very much an outsider looking in at these things.
Yeah. And on my part, I want to apologize if sarcasm doesn't really like come across too well in a recorded piece of content for the internet. But yeah, any notion that I support any part of this is bullshit. Please recognize that.
Yeah.
This is all very terribly manipulative and shitty behavior. And it's interesting. It is interesting to look at this from your perspective, Max, of like having an intellectual interest. How does this happen? Because yeah. When we start getting into like how this affects people's daily lives who live in countries like this, which gets very grim. And I don't know if we're going to quite get into that in this episode, but you know, you look at awful things happening to people around the world and you're like, how could this come to be? How could this fucking happen? And this is where it starts, with like people setting up ideologies and putting constitutions in place that say things like this.
Yep. That's how that groundwork gets laid.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So the DPRK, North Korea, is the world's only current necrocracy. But we do have other instances of dead world leaders sitting on the throne in the past. And that's going to bring us to the story of Inés de Castro, who is really delightful. Inés lived about 30 years as a Galician noblewoman in Portugal. It's like an ethnic group in North Portugal. And she had a very Romeo and Juliet style relationship with a guy named Peter I, who was the Prince of Portugal at the time, later ascended to be king. And things got a little weird. I have a painting here in your notes of her coronation. This painting was done in 1849.
Beautiful painting.
Yeah, it's a really nice painting.
Yeah. Is he kissing the ring? Is that what's happening?
He's kissing the ring. She's dead.
What?
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No.
Okay, so when you said a Romeo and Juliet style romance, I was about to jokingly say, what, they poisoned each other on accident? Please tell me that's not what happened here.
Not exactly. I'll give you the backstory. So,
okay.
Peter I, who hilariously is known either as Peter the Just or Peter the Cruel, was next in line for the Portuguese throne in the 1340s. His dad, Alfonso IV, was king at the time, and he was like, once Alfonso died, he was going to be next. But Peter had like a political marriage. And he didn't really like his wife, and things weren't going well, because he was actually in love with Inés. And Inés was in a family who used to have power, and then they got exiled. And Alfonso IV was worried about them coming back into power because it would have politically upset their dynasty. So Alfonso IV had forbidden Peter's marriage to Inés. He was like, you're not allowed to marry her no matter what. And eventually, Peter's wife died. And Peter was like, so I'm going to marry Inez. And Alfonso is like, no, you're not allowed to do that. And he keeps trying to set Peter up with like different women who are actually in power, like the power structure he wants to maintain. Mm-hmm. And Peter is just not having any of it. Peter ends up secretly marrying Inez in 1346 and fathering some illegitimate children. This is an issue because this means that Alfonso IV is looking at these kids and being like, I don't like these kids. And now they are like second in line for the throne once I die. So Alfonso IV lost his shit a little bit. And some not great things went down.
Alfonso IV banished Inez after the death of Peter's first wife, primarily in an attempt to cause Peter's feelings for her to fade. Unfortunately, Peter publicly declared Inez to be his true love. At this point, in 1355, after 9 years of secret marriage, Alfonso IV ordered the assassination of Inez. 3 soldiers went to a monastery where Inez was hiding and decapitated her in front of her child, the heir to the Portuguese throne after Peter. Peter became lawful king of Portugal in 1357 and publicly declared his marriage to Inez true and valid. He had Inez's body exhumed and placed on a throne, then forced the entire court to swear allegiance to her rule. Sources recount the coronation as such, quote, "The king caused the body of his beloved Inez to be disinterred and placed on a throne adorned with the diadem and royal robes, and required all the nobility of the kingdom to approach and kiss the hem of her garment, rendering her, when dead, that homage which she had not received in her life." End quote. Peter never remarried, and spent years hunting down Inez's assassins. Upon capturing 2 of them in 1361, he had them executed by publicly ripping their hearts out, claiming that by destroying his own heart, they had already condemned themselves as heartless beasts.
It's pretty brutal.
Fuck yeah, dude, that's sick. That's very metal.
Yeah, that is like an extreme way to execute someone. To be like, you made me so sad that I'm going to destroy your heart.
You broke my heart. I'm going to Kali Ma your asses.
Yeah. Which is straight up what he did. It would get the message across.
Yeah.
And she like was set up in the throne room and treated as like the royal queen of Portugal at this time.
I'm really curious too, like, you know, what they might have done to like make sure her head stayed in place, you know, if there was some kind of complex system of ties and or a glue of some sort that you kind of reattach a severed head and make sure it stays in place while people are kissing the hem of your garment.
Yeah, that would just kind of thinking about this, I wonder if the Peter the Cruel nickname was probably a little more earned.
Yeah. Probably had something to do with this. Real quick, could you imagine you're a noble in this situation and it's your turn to pay homage to the queen and you go and, you know, kiss the sleeve of her shirt or whatever and her head rolls off onto like your head and you have a comical kind of clunk of noggins.
And then you're like immediately executed for disturbing the royal corpse.
You're like, it's not my fault. What the fuck?
Yeah. This story does have kind of like a sweet end though, because Inez and Peter are still buried across from one another. Like they're buried foot to foot, which seems weird, but at the time Portugal was heavily Catholic. Peter specifically requested this burial form so that at the final judgment, when their bodies are given new life and rise from the grave, the first thing they see upon rising from the grave is like the other one's eyes.
That's very cute.
In like probably the most disturbing way, it is very, very cute.
Yeah, but what if it backfires and like they both rise up, but she rises without her head because she hasn't reattached it yet?
He rises up from the grave and is like, oh!
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, no. So I get that like that story gets kind of political and in the weeds. Unfortunately, our next example is even more political and even more in the weeds because now we're going to deal with the Catholic Church. This next story is the story of the Synodus Horrenda, or the Cadaver Synod.
Ooh, spooky.
Yeah. So this is the trial of a pope that took place in January of the year 897 and was also pretty wild. So here's another painting from 870 titled Pope Formosus and Stephen the Sixth by Jean-Paul Lorenz.
This is a very cool painting, Max. Got some good skeletons in here.
Yeah, this one, it's a little more clear that the person on the throne is a corpse.
Yeah, the makeup job is not as good in this one.
Yeah. But you've got Pope Stephen over there yelling at another corpse.
Just pointing and yelling at a corpse. It's very good.
Yeah, as we go through the story, we're going to see that Pope Stephen was a little unhinged the whole time. And that this may not have been that surprising to some people. So this story takes place during a time when instability within the Catholic Church was like really popping off. Like things were getting, there were schisms. There were anti-popes like every year. This kicked off a stretch from the year 896 to the year 904 when every single year there was a new pope. Because the old pope kept getting killed.
Yeah.
So, Formosus, the guy who is on the throne here, ironically, Formosus translates to, like, good looking.
He had very ironic.
He's, like, kind of hot.
Very ironic considering this painting and the circumstances we find him in here.
Formosus was a guy who was appointed pope in 891. And he ruled until his death in 896. He was like a pretty controversial pope because he did a lot of like very politically gray things. Like this is when like Rome was still basically like the pope's country. And Formosus spent his 5-year reign kind of trying to set up his own little like mini kingdoms in countries that he had conquered. Like, he was trying to expand his empire.
Sure.
And once he died, which he probably got assassinated, he was just put in a tomb and sealed up, and we thought that was going to be the last of him. But in the way the Catholic Church was operating at this time, there's a lot of tradition and history, and the guy who was appointed pope after him, Stephen the Sixth, couldn't like undo all the things Formosus had decreed. He couldn't just be like, we're starting over, we're doing different things now. He had to like go back and repeal all of them. But Stephen the Sixth was kind of impatient and also a little crazy, so he opted for like a more non-traditional route to get rid of everything Formosus had done.
In January of 897, Pope Stephen VI ordered that the body of Pope Formosus be exhumed, dressed, and brought to the papal court for trial. The body sat on a throne, and Formosus' spirit was channeled, and he answered questions through a church deacon. After facing charges of perjury and falsifying his role as a bishop, Formosus was declared guilty and subject to the punishment of damnatio memoriae, or removal from memory. All of Formosus's decrees were nullified, and Stephen cut off the fingers from Formosus's right hand, symbolizing the removal of all blessings the former pope had given. Ironically, by doing this, Stephen voided his own ordination as a bishop, stripping him of any real power and protection. In keeping with the damnatio memoriae, the corpse of Formosus was buried in a pauper's graveyard. Quickly realizing burying Formosus wouldn't prevent his followers from still venerating his corpse, Stephen ordered the corpse disinterred again, tied to multiple weights, and thrown into the Tiber River. Eventually, the ropes broke, and the corpse washed up in Rome, where it supposedly began to perform miracles. This spectacle caused another uprising in the church. Now stripped of any official protection, Pope Stephen VI was arrested and imprisoned. He was quickly found strangled to death in his cell in August 897.
Yeah, so this is where we kind of get into the how Stephen was a little, maybe not all the way there.
A little impulsive.
So he was accusing Formosus of illegitimately being a bishop while being pope at the same time, which ironically was the exact same thing Stephen himself was doing.
Yeah.
So he kind of opened up this precedent for being like, well, you just like dug this dude's body up and charged him with this crime, and he did the exact same thing you're doing. And that kind of kicked off this like 8-year period where popes were killing other popes on a yearly basis.
Like, great precedent set.
Yeah. Things flip a lot here, and it's a total mess. So, okay, let's get a timeline. So Stephen makes this accusation and digs up Formosus in January 897.
Yeah.
In August 897, Stephen is murdered by the next pope, Pope Theodore II. So in December 897, Pope Theodore II, the guy who came after Stephen and liked Formosus but didn't like Stephen, he nullified the original trial, reinstated Formosus as like an official pope, which Stephen had stripped of him, and then reburied Formosus' body in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Because they still had the body, because it just like washed up. Like, they threw it in a river, right, and then it immediately was like not in the river anymore.
God, could you imagine being Stephen VI when that happens? You're just like, can I catch one break? Just one time, please.
And then you're killed in prison. It's no fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that probably sucks.
That sucks. And then, like, so Pope Theodore II also got murdered. And then the next year, 898, Pope John IX also nullified the cadaver synod, but he wanted to do a bunch of the sketchy political stuff Formosus had been doing. So he was like, okay, we're going to forget about that because that corpse had some really good ideas, and I want to do some of that political stuff.
Sure. It was a good idea. He wants to take it and run with it.
Yeah. And then in the year 904, so like 6 years after this, another pope, Pope Sergius III, reconvicted Formosus. So again, he didn't bring his body out, but he like put this dead pope on trial, reconvicted him, and then absolved Stephen VI for like a third time.
Jesus.
It's like a real mess.
All within one decade, too, of like all this shit happening.
Yeah.
It's just all this back and forth.
And because of this, the Catholic Church no longer allows you to put a dead body on trial.
thank God for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a silly thing that that was allowed to be done in the first place.
There's a really good Simpsons line where Homer says, like, because of me, there's a rule. And this is a very, like, Stefan the Sixth being like, because of me, there's a rule.
Yeah. A dubious honor.
Yeah. And I understand that that all gets very confusing. But if you want to brush back up on your, like, 9th century papal history and make sure you didn't miss any of that stuff, we're going to have links to further readings in the free show notes on our Patreon page. So be sure to go check that out.
Yes, patreon.com/predeadboys.
Yeah. And this has been a lot, but it's kind of fun to think that, like, our current political system is a real mess. And even though maybe we're close to having some, like, corpses propped up on stage debating each other, we're not actually there yet.
It's getting suspiciously close with our presidential race.
Yeah.
This was fun. I appreciate this because, yeah, I think politics is such a fucking minefield of a topic, especially in America right now, that it's fun to look back on some of the silly shit that happened. And, you know, all right, I kind of appreciate this as a little bit of a palate cleanser before thinking about, you know, what do I do with my vote and my activity in our current day and age?
Yeah.
It could be a lot worse. Could be propping up dead popes.
Yep.
Making legislation based on that. Well, cool. Thanks for putting all this together, Max. Appreciate it. And thank you guys for listening to yet another episode. We would love to hear your thoughts on, I guess, about propping up dead popes.
The papacy. And,
yeah. We would love to hear your thoughts on politics. What do you think about North Korea? What do you think about who you're going to vote for president? I don't know if I'm wanting to engage too much with that because I have a headache talking with my family about that shit. But in general, we'd love to hear from y'all. Come talk to us. We are at PreDeadBoys on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us predeadboys@gmail.com with any thoughts or comments or questions that you have for us. Go ahead and send us an email. You can search for PreDeadBoys podcast on Facebook and join our Facebook group. And best of all, you can join our Discord. If you send us a message or an email on any of those aforementioned platforms, we can send you an invite to our Discord, where we thankfully don't talk too much about politics and talk more about, I guess it might fall into politics, just some recent news with the death care industry and cute Halloween decorations and merchandise that our friends are purchasing and sharing on there. It's a good time. It's very fun, lighthearted discussion. You'll make some friends just joining it and engaging in the conversation. I know we've made a couple friends all over the world through it, and it's been really cool. So make sure you ask for an invite, and we can send that to you. If you want to support what we do on the podcast, one way you can do that is to check out our Patreon. Like we said, that is patreon.com/predeadboys. You can consider pledging $1 or $5 a month, and at the $5 a month level, you get some extra goodies. But once again, whether or not you contribute to our Patreon, go ahead and check out that website so you can check out all the notes that Max has put together for this and the last few episodes. It's a lot of really good research done and really good images that, unfortunately, we can't do justice to in an audio format. You just have to settle for me describing what paintings look like. You got to go to patreon.com/predeadboys and look at that stuff yourself, because it's a lot of fun and you'll probably learn something. And I noticed Max also will put some links into additional information that we didn't quite get a chance to cover. So there's some good shit there. I really like the way you put it together. It's very readable, and, you know, it's not just like scattered crazy notes that you just threw together last minute. It's like, it's a very readable, enjoyable document. And yeah, just poke around there. Again, patreon.com/predeadboys. Check that stuff out. All kinds of good stuff on our Patreon. Whether or not you want to pledge money, the biggest way you can support this podcast is just sharing it with your friends. Share it on social media. Share it in person in an actual conversation. Tell a buddy to listen to your favorite episode of the show. We don't advertise. Max and I actually were kind of goofing around. I'm not going to name any names, but we did get an offer, I guess, to get a sponsor, but it's kind of a raw deal, and I don't know why a fitness brand is trying to contact us.
I got these tiny little arms, man. I don't know. Maybe I need fitness. Maybe they're trying to tell me something.
I would say that we are not unfit people,
no.
But we are not paragons of health that should be contacted for fitness advertising opportunities. I don't know. I think I'm not totally sold that it wasn't a scam. But yeah, we don't do any of that shit because we don't want to bore you guys. We don't want to waste your time with stuff that we think is just like kind of scammy. You know, we like that the entirety of this podcast is just us putting together stuff that we think is really cool and worth sharing. So we want to continue to do that. And any way that you can support us without us having to rely on ads, we really appreciate that. And we're really grateful for everybody who's helped us do that so far. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by our friends in Brat Curse. Make sure you check out Brat Curse on Spotify or wherever you listen to music, and go support them on their Bandcamp, bratcurse.bandcamp.com. And that's going to do it for us.
So I think I'm going to go and start my, get like a little Squarespace going for my campaign for Coroner.
Okay, so you're going to actually start a campaign and you're going to give Ortiz a little bit of opposition.
Not seriously. I think I just want to see my name like I want to get like 1% of the vote. I wonder how many people like.
Dude, we've got a platform here. We've got the what, number 6 best history podcast in Macedonia. So, you know, we might be able to leverage that into some political power for you.
People can't vote from Macedonia. They can't vote in our county election.
Listen, man, if we can get Russians to tamper with our elections on a national level, then we can get Macedonians to tamper with our local elections.
The Macedonians can get me 1% of the vote. I think that'd be kind of fun.
No, real talk, though. I don't want to do any voter fraud, but I am really attached now to the idea of like getting your name to show up on a coroner's office. But what would you do if you actually got the gig? What if, like, through some freak accident, like, nobody was really aware and just, like, the majority of people actually ended up voting for you because they're like, yeah, why not? I mean, do you think you'd do a good job in the coroner's office?
No. No. No, I would have to be a write-in candidate.
Yeah.
I would probably immediately abdicate back to Dr. Ortiz. I'd be like, I can't do this.
You clearly know how to do your job better than we do.
I can't.
All right. Well, shout out to Dr. Ortiz. Keep doing your thing. And we will talk to all of y'all later.
Yeah.
Max and Dorian here reminding you. Why don't you say it this time?
You're going to rot.
Damn right.
So Alfonso IV lost his shit a little bit, and some not great things went down. You got something to say about that?
No, I was just like, I was enraptured.
Sucks.
It was good storytelling.
Thanks, man.